additional nature, which is a new nature, which is a manifestation of the quality of the Father's nature. And so we have conflict. And we've talked about a lot of things. I've laid a lot of foundational material. It seems like it takes a while to get to the enemies. But without an understanding of these things in our minds, it's very difficult to get the picture of what is going on with the enemies. And so last week, and week before, we got started on the list in Galatians chapter 5. And Galatians chapter 5 does create a few problems because of the King James translation, other translations, because of the text, because we have textual problems. We have a couple of words that are omitted in the critical text. There's a little question concerning word order. We're not going to worry about any of these things at all tonight in this matter, but let me go ahead and read the AV. AV is Authorized Version, which is a saying of, in a more academic way, King James Version. And so in 5 of Galatians, in verse 19, it says, the works of the flesh are manifest. And I want to come back before we go on into the material about that word manifest again. Which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings, and such like. And if I were to ask you tonight to take and write down that list of words and give me what you understand the definition to be, I would not be surprised that many of you be a little bit confused because some of these words don't have the same kind of meaning that we may have picked up somewhere else. Lasciviousness is an interesting word, and it gets a bad rap in that it's often directed at, I mean, the concept is not clean, and it really has this scandalous kinds of sexual behavior that is usually public in nature. And we've looked through that. But as we go down through these, it says the works of the flesh are manifest. And I don't care how many times you tell me that you're spiritual and I see a work of the flesh, it is obvious. It is manifest. It is under the spotlight. It is very easily seen. It is visible. And all of those are definitions of manifest. And what you say it has to match up with your actions. And if you say you're spiritual and you're exhibiting works of the flesh, then you lied by saying you were spiritual. And I know a lot of Christians have pulled that shenanigan. They think they're doing righteous things, usually it's by works of the law, and it creates issues. Now, where we are in our notes, we're on 45 or 46, depending on the pagination. We're on Cap J, two-thirds of the way down the page. And the term we're looking at, and I have them listed as social works of the flesh, and the term, and I call it the fleshly fragmentation bomb. And that's a guy kind of a description. These kind of things tend to blow up, and they fragment. And the first one is hatred.
Yeah, you're right.
Pardon me. Hatred is a term, and I hope you've gotten some of my rhythm in my notes. I will use a definition in the main header that relates to that Greek word. Now, you'll notice that most of these definitions under my main heads are usually designed so that they're pretty easy to communicate. Then a little later, I give you a more technical definition that is mine and explain it. And so we need to know that because of the speed at which we're going to be moving here. The word is ekthros. It's ekthroi here. I had to smile when I looked at this. I put the singular in the parentheses and I left the plural, hatreds, in the Greek. But it's a strong hostility against any person that seeks his worst, an emotional opposition to God and or men that seeks to harm its object. Now, this word, we are familiar with it and its terms because It's a word for enemy. But before we do that, we need to talk about some concepts of hatred. Ekthros, this word here that is a part of the work of the flesh, is always evil. It's always unrighteous. And so when you see this word, it's always going to be that way. Now, there's another word to hate, which is misio, and I have it again in your notes on the section on number 2 on the bottom of the page, and it occurs 42 times. W.E. Vine says it's a malicious, unjustifiable feelings toward others, whether towards the innocent or by mutual animosity. The definitions I put in here are the more negative ones. Misuo is not listed in the works of the flesh, but it will lead to ekthros. It can become ekthros. I have that on D on the top of page 46 or 7. And it has the idea you can be an enemy of a person or things, and it can happen in any circumstance in the word we have. Misio, it's okay to hate sin. I always have heard for years, and most of you have heard the same, that God doesn't hate sinners, he hates sin. I can show you from the Old Testament, there's a passage that says that the one who sins, he hates. And I think we get a lot of, what do I want to say, oversimplification, which is very, very confusing in that matter. I have the data in the notes on page 46 or 7. Ekthra is the word that we have here that is found 4 times. We have ekthros, the masculine noun, 32 times, and it occurs 36 times altogether. So it occurs a pretty substantial number. I break it out under C between the Gospels and Acts and Grace Revelation. And you see in Grace Revelation, we have the four times that we mentioned above on ekthra, and ekthros occurs 12 times. My definition of hatred or enmity is, it is an attitude, and this is D1, an attitude or an act of hostility towards someone or something constituted to be an enemy. And so there's an activity that results. It can be a reaction or a simple hostile action. And so it is a hostility wanting the worst for another person or principle considered to be an adversary. An adversary, obviously, you could say an enemy. So the details on number 2. It's a mental attitude that easily leads to action. It's a mental attitude of hostility. It may be deserved or not deserved. It really is a believer to have this kind of an attitude. We can do misuo, the other term, but this one tends to be active and reactive. And I know Christians in their righteous hatred act in certain ways to get them in trouble, and it should never have happened because they have let it get out of hand. It's a mental attitude that desires the worst for its object. It's a mental attitude that produces hostile activities towards the recipient of the hatred. And so it's internal. And so you end up with issues. Now, tonight I had to think about it as I was preparing tonight, and I was trying to think of how I want to handle it. We have so many passages, and the structure I have in here is also designed for teaching, and I think I'm going to cheat a little. I shouldn't say cheat. I don't have time to do what I need to do and look up all of the illustrations and that I have, and that's on the top of 47-48. Friendship with the world is as enmity or hatred against God in James 4:4. Then I have a list of some of the concepts under 6. Enemies in the thought process by wicked works. I'd love to spend time in Colossians 1:21. When a disorderly brother is acting disorderly, and that is, he's not meeting his responsibilities, maybe not working, It was what was going on in Thessalonica in the Thessalonian church. It says you don't treat him as an enemy. You just don't sit down and eat with him, but you don't treat him as an enemy. That's kind of hard to do sometimes. You have to say, well, until you get a job, I'm not going to be able to sit down and eat with you. I'm tired of paying your bill. No, that's not what it says. But anyway, that's the idea. Now, the next of these works of the flesh in my list here is the work of the sin nature expressing contention or strife. It's the word eris. The AV translates it variance. And it's a quickness to seek a quarrel or altercation that brings discord and wrangling. And I'm using some older English terms by using wrangling here. So it's a disposition to argue or quarrel with others. The noun is found 9 times in the text. The verb occurs 1, so it only occurs 10 times. What is interesting about this word is that it tends to occur in clusters. By clusters of things that are unrighteous. And so I've given the list here when I made the note, Romans 1, 29 through 32, 2 Corinthians 12, 20 and 21. Of course, in the works of the flesh, Galatians 5, 19 through 21. 1 Timothy 6, 4, Titus 3. In other words, there's usually 2 or more. And some of those have 7 or 8. And so they're all bad things. They're not all identified in the list of the works of the flesh in each of these passages, which will lead us to where we come to, what we come to in the end, in that matter. And so this idea, and my definition on the bottom of page 47 or 48 is a propensity to seek altercations by finding differences and seeking to be contentious over them. Many times this is accompanied by other elements of the works of the flesh. Heresy, which is a party spirit, zeal, we'll be talking about zeal in a bit here, and there are several others that can accompany this and stimulate this kind of thing. Zeal is like jealousy. You have envy. They can tie to this. And this word always has an evil connotation. This is not a reaction to somebody that is teaching erroneous doctrine. Rather, it's a reaction to somebody not because they're doing wrong, but because they're doing right, usually. One has a fleshly inclination to take an opposing view to anything for the sake of contention or debate. And there are people that are characterized by this work of the flesh. They're looking to pick a fight. They're looking to be to cause somebody to become defensive, because that's their goal. And I've given you a list of words on the top of the next page on C in the parentheses. And that is, this work of the flesh is identified by the following descriptive words. And you can imagine this was fun to make the list. Quarrelsomeness, altercation, contention, wrangling, self-imposed debates. That was coming out of a lexicon. Self-imposed discord, rivalry. Disputing, dissension, squabbling, abrasive argumentation, a grating harshness of approach. And so it's kind of interesting with all of those. Now, I've got to a place right here where I will have to give a commercial. I'm going to read this definition and then I'll talk about a little bit more about this letter D. No sins more commonly invades the church than eris. That's our word. None is more destructive of Christian fellowship, but eris cannot gain an entry to the church if Christ is supreme there. And this is a quote out of William Barclay's book, which is kind of hard to get on Amazon. You can usually get it used. Don't let them kill you price-wise. William Barclay was a well-known Anglican radio preacher in England. And so he was an Anglican, a popular kind of preacher. if I was to think about anybody more like him here, I would not use my favorites. Donald Gray Barnhouse was one who was like this. He had his foot in the wrong place, and he was very, very popular in his day. Vernon McGee is very, very careful with what he does, so I would not compare him, because McGee is really more orthodox by far. Don't use the word more orthodox, fundamental. And so he would not be in that list. But William Barclay's little book called Flesh and the Spirit goes through the works of the flesh and fruit of the Spirit. And I'm not going to wave a flag for his definitions of fruit of the Spirit, but he does some very interesting studies in the works of the flesh. You probably won't be able to get it in hardcover, but they did print some in England, and they were a little hard to come by. But William Barclay, and the title of the book is Flesh and Spirit. And I recommend that in class, because it's nice to – he does some legwork linguistically that helps illustrate these things. And so with as many of these terms that occur, you would expect it to occur in the Corinthian epistles. And it is found in 1 Corinthians 1:11. You have the word strife there. It was part of that problem. And so you have strife, and you have division, and you have these various works of the flesh that were exhibited there. But in 1:11 it says, "Where it hath been declared unto me, brethren, by them that are of the household of Chloe, that there are contentions among you." Now, the word contentions is this word, evidently has produced the divisions word that we see back in verse 10. You see in the middle of the verse it talks about divisions. These works of the flesh tend to run in groups, whether pairs, triplets, or otherwise. And so you can kind of see it in 3:3. You have zeal, strife, and divisions mentioned in 1 Corinthians. So these three works of the flesh, it's really obvious when you see it in the Corinthian epistles, plural. 2 Corinthians 12, 20, and 21 have 8 different kinds of unrighteousness, 4 of which are clearly in the list of the works of the flesh in 5:19 of Galatians. And so you can see, as you look down through here, it's part of a list in other places, so we won't worry about it. You can look them up. I've got all the core scriptures in here, I had to do that because I knew, I told you when we started, I have this many pages of notes so that you will have equipment so that you can study the subject on your own. In other words, I've done the research for you pretty much. And so that's where this goes. And when I did this, I could not tell you how long or how many hours I spent doing the work so that you could get this nutshell presentation of this material. Because there's a large amount of research, and I love to do the research. It can get me in trouble. It got me in trouble last week. Sunday, if you tagged along, and when I finally get a synopsis done, Sunday I dealt with comparatives in Hebrews, that which compares. And there are special Greek forms that we call comparatives. Some of them have endings, some of them are particles, some are, they're special forms. And I went through those and research on that. I essentially went through the book of Hebrews twice, looking at the Greek and double checking endings. And then I went through it again, all the way through it in detail, so I could get my list. And then I preached on Sunday, didn't have time to do half of it. But I did get the Teros endings in that. Next page, top of page, We have the word that's translated spite in the King James. And I am sad that they, wait a minute, wrath. Okay, what is the AV translation? Emulations. There we go. And everybody knows what emulations is. We used it 5 minutes ago in our language. Of course not. But it's the word zelos. That sounds like a pretty easy word to match up. And it is a word for zeal. And it comes from the concept of something that is heated or warmed up. There's this heat, and I call it a heated pursuit to something desired with self-centered or evil objectives. And I'm talking about the work of the flesh. It's an operational pressing for unrighteous objectives unworthy of a Christian. Now, I do know that zeal can be used of good things, and it is also used of bad things. We get to the word anger, thumos. The word zeal is tied, I mean, it's tied to the word strong desire. And there's a link here almost to zelos. This word occurs 43 times in its various forms. There are six derivatives or six forms. And I gave you, you know, the overview. The way it's usually translated, it can be translated hot. Zestos is hot. But zelos, remember, it's okay. Good zeal. You can be zealous of good works. And so you have it, and I've listed them all, in Grace Revelation. That is from John 13 to Revelation 3. And so what we have is, let's see, 25. Why didn't they put that in? 30 occurrences under D3. And I've given you the verses. So again, I give you the opportunity to hustle it and look for it. Now, positive zeal on it. I hope that we are all zealous of good works. A person who has the gift of pastor, teacher, should be zealous of having the office of bishop. Not always, but there should be a measure of willingness or readiness to be into that, be in the office. And so on C1, there are 23 positive New Testament occurrences in Grace Revelation. But the negative ones are the one we're talking about, and that's on the bottom of page 49, a list, and on the top of the next. So we have 18 of those. Now, my definition is on D1, and that is it's a negative drive, and I'm talking about the work of the flesh. I'm not just defining the word zeal. A negative drive that is constantly accepting, desiring, pursuing, perpetuating, and defending anything with a self-centered and evil intentions. And so it is a burning desire, and it can be a burning desire for good, a burning desire for evil. I remember growing up, and one of the things that was really intriguing was because of the emphasis of my early years in the church, in fundamental churches, you know, I would pray that God would give me zeal. And I ended up with a zeal that I considered zeal for the Lord, which was a sin nature zeal, in which I used my sin nature to try to please God, and it became a religious work of the flesh. Zeal can easily be that. And so it wasn't zealous of good works. It was what I had as a young person was a zeal, what I thought, to please God by certain things you do and you don't do. And so a lot of times, these were negative works of things I didn't do, therefore I must be a great Christian. And I had a big list of things that I didn't do. And I look back at it, and I think I almost regret some of those days because I was so confident I was doing what God wanted me to do because I didn't do this or did do this. And realized that it was all by my sin nature. And many of us have been there, I'm sure. And so what I have on the bottom of page, whoops, I need to go through some of those other things to help. Many lexicographers tie it to the word burn. There are other words for burn as well. Inherent in the idea is fervently pressing toward a goal or an objective. And so the objective would be unrighteous in the evil sense, and the process would be perverted. And so it's normally a self-centered drive for personal achievement or advancement involving a person or a cause that tends to anticipate having advantage over others, so it would bring them harm. And I'm saying that a little differently than I have it in the notes. Barclay suggested in the bad sense, it has the sense of an envy and a jealousy, and zelos can be translated jealousy, which are destructive of personal relationships and of individual happiness. Now, the word kine in the Hebrew is translated zeal, and it's very similar. It has that idea of zeal or jealousy. If you look up the word jealousy, you will likely see this word used, and I can't remember how many times the AB translates it that way, but it's an evil kind of thing in that context. Kine in the Hebrew is translated both ways. It occurs quite a few times because, remember, under law in the Old Testament, they did not have the Holy Spirit. They did not have a new nature. They did not have the fruit of the Spirit. So they just had what was in their sin nature or their only nature. And so zeal was very common, and it carries across. I read Acts, and I just can't help but see some of those Jews who were saved out of Judaism didn't know how to manage their sin nature and were zealous for a lot of things. Remember, Paul said he was zealous for the law, and he thought that was great. And he said, I have no charges that can be brought against me concerning where I've been. And so, again, I've given you a whole bunch of passages, and I'm not going to go further with these on the bottom of 50. I have some summary kinds of statements as we get through that. On 51 or 52, the word for anger or wrath. The fleshly displeasure in any situation, and I call it its short fuse, a boiling internal excitement stimulated by something external that seethes within a person. Projected anger against anything from within a person. And it's interesting how we are challenged sometimes when things just don't want to go quite right. We can move into our sin nature, and if we don't catch it and we don't realize it, that this is a lust of the flesh, to react, we can have problems, and this is one of them. I've been forced to watch my own existence a little bit more recently, because with my fall, I have numb fingertips. I have some nerve damage in my neck, which I hope we can get worked out later this week. But I can't feel things. Tonight I buttoned my shirt with two tries. And I didn't even think about the fact that I need some feeling on the end of my fingers to button buttons. But I'm finding that, in fact, today, just as an example, I was putting a book on the shelf and I couldn't feel the way I was gripping it with it because it had a dust cover and was heavy. And it slipped right out of the dust cover because I couldn't feel it slipping until it was too late. It was just enough. It's right on the edge. And it would be real easy to blow a fuse on it. And it was inconvenient. I had to pick up the book. I had to open the dust cover, make sure it was secure, and then get it back on the shelf. And thumos, like I said, tends to be a flashy flashpoint. This word occurs 19 times in all of, whoops, no, it has 19 forms. Occurs 135 times. I did not include all of them. Epithumia, that is lust, is from thumos, epi with thumos or thumia. And I didn't include those in here. I got the key ones here. So you have them. Thumos, of course, is key. AV translates to wrath. fierceness, indignation. Be wroth, good King James English. And so that gives you some idea. Grace Revelation has it seven times. Colossians 3:21 says, lest they be discouraged. And the idea there is to be of short temper. And we have several words for anger. We have the word orge, thumos, are two. I have that all categorized kind of under C. Thumos is anger or wrath from smoke or to make smoke or steam. I always think of those cartoons where they used to show anger by having steam coming up from somebody's head. Orge, on the other hand, is more of a swelledness, being swollen. And they, it can result in external active hostility. Orge is the word that deals with the wrath of God on earth. It only happens on earth, and it culminates in the tribulation period in that matter. And so my definition is a slow burning or swelling type of anger that can, see, I told you I have these fingers that don't want to work quite right. I can't feel pages sometimes. Produce outbursts of anger or an internal reaction of agitation against someone or something at someone. Now it says burning. It can blow up. It's like you've got a fuse. And it's general, it can be used in a good sense in some places, but most of the, I mean, their derivatives are that way. It involves violent movement or inward excitement. It's not a sin of itself. Remember, it says, be angry, and that's thumos, and sin not. So you don't have to sin when you get angry. It can legitimately be possessed and not lead to an act of sin. But these are impulses that can lead to outbursts of anger and can easily lead out to an outwardly manifested type of anger. And so I have those, you know, if we have a temper problem. There was a day that... I had to learn to control this part of my flesh. I knew when I was very young, that I had a temper problem, an anger problem. And it was very easy as I was growing up, to have some discussions with people if they crossed me the wrong way. And I would take my two friends with me, and it was real easy for thumos to work. You know, my two friends were right and left. And I could start swinging on somebody. That anger would get out of control. Sometimes it might have been somewhat righteous, but a lot of times I could defend myself by saying it was okay to beat up on somebody. But the problem was I beat up on kids that had longer legs than mine, and I couldn't catch them sometimes. But... when they would say things and they would, I'm in my anger, if I'd have controlled it, my testimony had been a whole lot better. And, in fact, my anger almost split the church as a teenager, because, you don't go and, take your two friends and, hit the deacon's kid. And that one may have been more righteous than unrighteous, but, boy, that caused a lot of trouble. I did learn some lessons. I learned that I had to learn to control my temper. And I don't know how many years, even as a pastor, I realized that I had to control my temper. It would have been too easy for me to slide back to where I normally would respond, and it would have caused a lot of trouble. And I've often thought I would have probably gotten beat up pretty good in some cases, because I tend to use my fists. And I would have been proud of it at that time, and that would have been maybe satanic on top of it all in that. So I have some examination of material of it on page 52 or 53 and 54, 53, 54. I have a little list of some of these clusters. I've got a six-form cluster in Colossians 3:8, and it's there. In 17 works of the flesh, of course, in Galatians 5:20. There's some real fun study on these, what I call clusters. I've done lists of these clusters of the works of the flesh and other kinds of unrighteousness, which will be pertinent to the last element that we have here in Galatians 5. Then the next word is strife on number 5. And this is, strife is that which distracts from the truth and involves what we call rivalries. The AV also translates it rivalries. And I call it a manipulation for self-promotion. Is there a thei that creates factions. Personal selfish ambition that demands that others conform to one's party or faction. It's a strong desire to win a following for one's purposes. Of course, this would never happen in a church. Now, unfortunately, that work of the flesh has raised its head many times in many churches and caused a multitude of problems. And even though it doesn't occur a lot of times, it occurs 9 times, 7 times as a noun, 2 times as a verb. I made a note on that. It says it may be related to eris, but it is in the list separately. So God gives it a different flavor than eris, which we've already seen on it. So let me get my definition, which is on the next page. And that's down on letter E, on number 1. It's a scheming by which one puts himself in a good light by any method necessary while ignoring the rights of others, other people. It's really interesting, this manipulation to make somebody look good. I don't know why in my life that I end up teaching in areas that end up being extremely pertinent in this time of the year every 4 years. I might pick up a book and read it. It's inevitable during a political campaign. It seems that, and I don't attribute it to divine intervention, but I've been fascinated how often that happens, and it's not by intention. I have worked very, very hard to avoid the political kinds of things. That's another, was that the world system? It was world system was a problem for me. I've gone through a number of times where I had considered running for office, and God has prevented me from it. I really have a lot of questions as to how a Christian can function in the world system in politics because of so much chicanery. If you're righteous, you're going to end up with mud all over you. And this is one of those words that relates to that, this scheming to make you look good on it. And it's very common. Now, I've given you some definitions. I smile because in classical Greek it was, and this comes out of Liddell and Scott, classical Greek lexicon, it's his definition or part of it involved the self-seeking pursuit of political office by unfair means on it. And let's see, in Forest Grove, well, we got a lot of little community kind of cemeteries. We got 2 major cemeteries. I'm not sure any of them are going to vote or not. If we were in Chicago, they'd all vote in that matter. But it's self-centered self-promotion. And it's a prejudicial kind of selfish ambition. I am glad that other people can be in government and involved with it. Because every time I look at government, I see in different levels, I see that there is really practically nothing that I can do as a believer. I went to the local school board meetings for 1.5 years with the possibility of seeing, is there any way that this can be changed? That's what happens when you've been a Christian school administrator for a while. I thought maybe we could get some decent quality of education. So I go to these meetings. And I quit after 1.5 years. And I decided there is absolutely nothing that you can do. It's impossible. It's all world system. And so I thought I could improve the education. I knew what my kids didn't get. They were pretty much out of school. And I saw the stuff that they were being taught, and I thought maybe there'd be some way to help improve things. When I went to a meeting at one point, one of the teachers was, one of them was with community members and teachers, and they wanted us to give a list of things we thought they should be teaching. And I said, we need to teach our kids a work ethic. And a teacher who is in another realm of politics today and retired said with a sneer on his face, "You mean a Protestant work ethic?" And I wasn't fast enough to come back and say, "Well, I'm sorry, you didn't need to insult the Catholics." But that would have told me whether he read certain books in it. But the world system will try to seek its own ends. And it's interesting when we look at this. I mean, I like the word selfishness. It fits right in here real often. And I've got it noted with other words. I hear 43. Okay, I have a goal, and I don't know whether I'm going to make it. I'm going to try. So you have that information. You have a lot of scripture. You have lists. I hope that it's possible to pick up which, if you want to pursue this. There are things you need to know. My simple definitions will get you. You'll know what they are. You need to identify them. Oh, I forgot my cards. I was going to bring my World War II cards to identify ships and planes tonight, and I forgot. Okay, now at the bottom of page 55 or 56, I call it fleshly feelings and frolics. That's Galatians 5:21. I call them social works. Now, I've done this. The division of these, you can divide them however you want. This makes it comfortable for me when I teach it or preach it. And so I break them out the way I have them in the cap letters down through these notes. This displeasure with the prosperity of others seen as a work of the flesh. And that's envyings. It's phonos. I did that again. Put the singular after in parenthesis. And it's a feeling of ill will or malice that resents benefits received by another. A person who's indignant that person got something that they didn't get, which they believe probably that they better deserved. And so it's an objectionable reaction against another person's good fortune. I put that term in. We don't have a good fortune term in Greek. We do in Hebrew. Which is kind of funny. Is not translated that way, by the way. This word occurs 10 times in two forms, in verb and noun. 8 times in Grace Revelation. I just chopped down to B and 2. My definition is it's a feeling of ill will or malice against another person who has prospered, gained an advantage, received a benefit that brings denial of one's good feeling for the other person's good or gain. And it reacts in indignation and holds a grudge against that person because of the good received. Now, it seems complex, but you can understand it, I think. If somebody gets something, this work of the flesh occurs over and over and over. That's one thing I smile about when I think of these state lotteries or national lotteries. How people resent anybody that wins. It's just a work of the flesh. It's not saying it's right or wrong, but they have that kind of problem. And so there's this negative reaction, which is a feeling. I mean, they feel they should have gotten it, not the other person. And so it perverts reason in that matter. And we see that all over our society today. Someone works very, very hard and is successful and has put 80 hours a weekend to get this business off the ground and this kind of thing. And somebody resents it because they didn't get that, have that success. Of course, they never worked 80 hours a week to get anything in that. And that's kind of, and that's an illustration where here in Oregon we have ballot measure that relates to taxing corporations that make more than have $100 million as income or profit anyway, and they want to tax that because it's just this envy that comes. It comes from this fanao, this green eye of envy. It involves ill will at the good fortune of another person. It begrudges something another person receives as a benefit. A person is indignant and sees a benefit as a personal insult in that he is unwilling to recognize the right of the recipient of the benefit to receive the benefit. A mental resentment that may lead to refusal to be involved with a person in his circumstances. Kind of interesting how often people think they deserve what they don't. And when someone else gets what they think they deserve, it will ruin relationships. And the best illustration of that, I think, deals with estates. When someone dies and you have a will, more families have been ruined in their relationship because someone thought that they should have something that someone else got. And it may have been specified in the will. And they will not talk to anybody through that person again for the rest of their lives. And they think they deserved it. Well, in my book, when I understand it, I think that the person who wrote the will deserved everything they got. And that you're very fortunate if you aren't in a will. I smile because God can use those things sometimes. I remember one year my parents had these little inheritances when the church tried to starve them out. And at the end of the year, with a little inheritance and people's giving, they ended up with exactly the salary that that church would have paid plus some. Plus, they had a freezer full of beef. And it was just like God said, okay, there's a way. I'm going to take care of us. And the people that were trying to starve my parents out could not believe that this happened. It had to be from the hand of God. I don't know whether they recognized it or not. I wasn't near at that time. I was long gone, had a family, and I have a church of my own at that time. Anyway, so this thing of envy, and I've got illustrations. There's some great illustrations in the Gospels. I've got them noted in that part, number one. The problem with envy, and let's see, do I want to say more? Well, let's go to James 4. I've been skipping too many verses. James 4, 5, and where I am is on 57 or 58, and I'm down on number 2 in parentheses, and that's James 4, 5. And if I can get to James 4, I'll be happy. Okay, I'm on James 4, 5. It says, do you think that the scripture saith in vain, the scripture that the spirit that dwelleth in us lust to envy? This is one of those rhetorical questions that says absolutely not. And it's kind of an interesting verse. Then he goes on and he says, but he giveth more grace. He does, you don't need that. God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-souled. You're two-souled. I know it says double-minded in the AV. But I have the other passages here that you can pursue if you would like. It's good. I mean, these studies, some of you have devotion time and that kind of thing. Sometimes these studies, to be doing, one of these words and look through these verses, throughout a week, it can be very edifying. Now, the next word is, involves the destruction of human life, and that's murder. And, it's in our works of the flesh, which is in Galatians 5:21. And what I've done with it, normally translated murder as it is in the AV, in 5, there's a textual problem here. Now, I mentioned as we started this list out of in 5, Galatians 5, 19, 20, 21, that the word adultery at the beginning is a textual problem. There's not a lot of not as much manuscript evidence as it could have. I don't have a problem if it's not there, because it's included in fornication, the next word. Murders has a whole lot more evidence to support it. It's just that they didn't like the versions. Their pet versions didn't include it. And so in the critical text, they leave it out. This is murder with intent. And I say it's intentional, brutal, malicious taking of a human life. The murder of another person, the termination of a life of a person by intent and design, an orchestrated removal of the physical life of another person. That's the word phonoi. Phonoi, phoinos, phonuo. These terms all occur 30 times together. The AV translates in the noun that we look at in Galatians 5, murder, 8 of the 10 times. And it's like you say, first degree murder by intent. If they had done the thou shalt not murder commandment accurately instead of saying thou shalt not kill, we would have had a whole lot less problems in the world we live in. It was a terrible translation. It doesn't mean just kill. It means to murder with intent. It's like what we call first degree murder. And so I've given you the list, under letter B, 8 times in Grace Revelation. My definition is senseless slaughter or killing of a human being. That's about as short a definition as I give. And so it means taking someone's life. There's no good reason for taking a life. It is not murder to execute someone as a penalty. That is, if it's a capital crime. It is not murder to defend your family from somebody who's broken in and seeking to do harm. So self-protection. It is not murder, no matter where you are in a war, to have killed someone. I have been reading a little bit about Civil War battles, battlefields. I've been to some, and I got a guide to some of them with some travel things. It was kind of an interesting book. But look at that. Look at how many people were killed. And there was a lot of reasons for the Civil War, but it wasn't murder. Even the snipers. I don't know if you remember in the Civil War, there was a guy whose name was Ira Sankey. He was the one who sang as a musician with Dwight L. Moody. And he was in the war, and he was out on post at night. And he was singing the song, and I don't know whether it's that familiar to you. He was singing the 99. There were 99 that safely lay in the shelter of the fold. And he's out in this in the middle of the night singing. And when he started to sing, he didn't realize it, but he was in the crosshairs of a Confederate sniper. And the sniper heard the song and didn't fire. And Sankey went on to serve the Lord as in a large number of other areas. He's the one that wrote the 99 part of the story. And that wouldn't have been murder. Just because somebody was singing a gospel song, it wouldn't have been murder for that sniper, though it did affect his conscience, so he did not pull the trigger. And I have a number of instances. You do have references to the Mosaic Law and the Sixth Commandment, and I have those noted on the bottom of page 58 or 59. And so you can tag down through here. John 8:44 uses a different term when it talks about Satan. He was a man-killer, and I have that the last thing in that list. Now, the next work of the flesh, and I hope I can fly on this one, and that is, it's drunkenness. Do we need to have a definition of drunkenness? It's inebriation that results in some personal removal of personal inhibitions and overcomes one's sensibilities. In other words, this means somebody is drunk. They're under the control of ethyl alcohol. It says, stop being drunk with wine in 5:18 of Ephesians, but be filled by the Spirit. Both of those are passives. When you're made drunk, it's ethyl alcohol that makes you drunk. It's because you were not smart enough not to drink. Drunkenness is found 15 times. It's pretty close to what we would call under the table drunk. In that matter, I was smiling. I read about someone who had been raised in the church, preacher's kid, rebelled. As soon as he could, he joined the Navy and did a lot of drinking, totally outside of the realm of that day in that group. And lo and behold, he would go to a bar, and when he'd get loaded drunk, what would he do? He'd start preaching. Hellfire and brimstone in the bars. He didn't fight with anybody. He just kept preaching. And it took a few years. Of course, the other Navy guys in the bar didn't especially appreciate it. And he evidently got his life straightened out and left alcohol. And my definition on 60 in the middle, intoxication in which alcohol and possibly other intoxicants influences the human senses, limiting their abilities to function. This can lead to addiction. That is the insatiability and passion of the appetites of the sin nature. And it could infer, I mean, it could go on into other things. Now, here in Oregon, we have this marijuana law for recreational marijuana. When I was in seminary in San Francisco, I was not that far when I was in school from the Haight-Ashbury in the hippie days. And I know what it means when I see somebody that is stoned. And they used to say they're stoned out of their mind. And marijuana will do that. Every time I see some of these legalized things, it's bad enough to have prescription drugs behind the wheel. But then you get the way that those things mess the marijuana really messes the synapses up. And then drunkenness. Marijuana happens to be very difficult to test for, but it's a work of the flesh. So if you're drunk, you have a real problem. I've got the passages on the bottom of page 60. Now, can I talk fast enough to get this last little bit done? I need to get there. Whoops. Okay, the next one is komoi. It's called revelings in the AV. These are drunken carousings that are uninhibited that may lead to rioting. It's a wanton conduct. And the emphasis of that definition, I've got my definition at the top of the next page. It's excessive carousing or partying, primarily involving the use of alcohol, in which many of the other works of the flesh can be satisfied and that might lead to rioting. It involves a happy, festive party, and I think it can involve drugs as well. It loosens up the morals. It incorporates other works of the flesh, and that is where the clock says I need to stop. So I'm coming back down. We've gone through now, and I've done it very quickly. I don't apologize for it because I know I have a lot here, but I do am thankful that we have in your hands, the lists of scriptures so you can work them. But we're going to talk about and such like. I didn't finish the list in that sense. It says and such like. And we will talk about that when we come together again, Lord willing, next week, if we aren't raptured first. Thank you, Father, again for your word. We can identify these things because they're described in scripture. And they are easily identified in most cases. And when you say they're obvious, it becomes just that. And this list that we have on the enemy's chart is the same, is a way to say, I know where that enemy is and what it is, and it's my sin nature. And now I know what to do with it. And we anticipate talking about that next week. In Christ's name, we thank you. Amen.